show! You have all made it to the dance. You have all made it.
Coming to you from the X-Access, it's John of All Trades with your host, John X.
Welcome to the John of All Trades podcast, episode 366. I'm your host, John X. Thank you for joining us. Glad to have you back once again. And this week, I welcome someone who is a staple in the Denver sports media scene, but who I just had the privilege of meeting personally for the first time not that long ago. Today on the pod, I welcome Sean Drotar, who is currently the host of Sandy and Sean weekdays at 4 to 6 p.m. on Mile High Sports, FM 98.1, also on Podcatchers Everywhere. Sean is also the senior editor at Mile High Sports. And on this week's show, it's funny, we just sat down. I didn't have a real script. I mean, I had a few ideas of where I wanted this to go, but mostly I wanted it to be natural because Sean has been speaking into a mic for a very long time, just like I have. And it's kind of fun when you just get together with someone and you talk with no net. So we talk about everything from sports gambling to his time as an editor for USA Today to what he thinks is the secret sauce for his longevity in the sports radio landscape to the Nuggets, to the Avalanche, to the Rockies. We cover a ton of real estate here and it's just fun. Here's the thing. You don't last this long in this competitive of an industry without being a good, smart, consummate pro. And Sean is just a great dude. And he's a dude who knows his stuff. Like me, he's been criticized for using elevated language, words with too many syllables, things of that nature. But you know what that means? That just makes us simpatico. That just makes us fast friends and good conversation partners. So you can find him at milehighsports.com or on FM 98.1 every weekday from 4 to 6 or on the socials at S. Drotar. Now, speaking of socials, I myself am on the socials. J-O-A-T pod is the handle. That's across platforms. Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, Pinterest, Instagram, Blue Sky, and Threads. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Those are going to be the most likely places you're going to find me. And like I always say, whether you know it or not, you are in the promotions business. So if you can point people to things that you like, for instance, if you're into this episode, share it on social, or if you want, leave a rating, leave a review, or hell, just tell someone about the show. Anything you do that alerts people to something that you like is helpful to the creators. Anyone who has ever tried to create anything knows that that is gold. Anytime someone says, hey, this is a fun show, go check it out, go listen to it, we love you for it. So keep that in mind. I appreciate you. Thank you for letting me be a part of your life. Now then, let's get to episode 366 of the show. Sean Drotar, senior editor at Mile High Sports, longtime sports radio personality, former sports editor at USA Today. We talk all things Colorado and sports, and his episode starts right now.
It's nothing. Who cares? Because he's...
They got it for nothing.
They got him for nothing, and they're splitting the payments. And I think after this year, I mean, you have to give him his fifth-year option, which they...
Okay.
So it's a free tryout. Right. You get a guy for $2.7 million.
And in quarterback terms, that's nothing.
Right. And if he happens to beat out, like, Stidham, cool, whatever. Sean Payton likes quarterbacks that your job is run the play you were told to
So that kind of put him and Russell Wilson at cross purposes.
Right.
Yeah.
That's why the only quarterback he's ever had success with is Breeze, because Breeze didn't improvise. Breeze's advantage was he could do read one, read two, read three, read four real quick. And that's all Sean Payton wants. Sean Payton's like, here's my play, run it as called. No audibles, no changes. So he and Wilson were never going to work.
No. Do you ever like cross paths with him? Have you met him?
Just once.
And what was that like?
It was brief. I mean, he's obviously a smart guy.
Strikes me as kind of a red ass, though.
He's kind of... Are we talking? Are we recording it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And that's my opinion.
Yeah. I think that Peyton seems like he's very sensitive to being wronged. And he's talked about it. You heard about the interviews in USA Today prior to the season.
Yeah.
Last year, the idea that Roger Goodell was still out to get him, the things like that. So Peyton's got a bit of a, in my perspective, a challenge in, it's a bit of a persecution complex. And a bit of the, I'm never got the credit that I deserve.
Hmm.
And that happens in the NFL when you have quarterbacks and coaches that pair up because, you know, you think about Brady and Belichick
sure.
or here in Denver, Shanahan and Elway or how things sync up. The players win the games. Coaches yeah. certainly matter, but the players win the games, and therefore the players get the majority of the credit. But some coaches, that bothers a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think Sean Payton's one of those guys. And so, you know, adding Zach Wilson, I think, makes sense. You give up nothing. It's cheap. If you don't like him after a year, you just don't worry about it. But it allows the Broncos to kick the can down the road because I don't think – I mean, I've been very clear about this on the radio show. They're not going to the playoffs this year with Bo Nix or Michael Penix or – Ryan Tannehill
sure.
or the clone of Drew Brees or whatever that they're hoping to find, it's not going to be a playoff season for the Broncos. So you might as well throw a couple darts. But for Broncos fans who are used to having better seasons than this, this
yep.
is the longest stretch of futility as an NFL franchise.
Right.
It's going to be a tough pill for Broncos fans to swallow, even if they do have new uniforms.
Yeah, right, which also were announced today, and, you know, huzzah. So here we are sitting in my house, but I'm asking you for your sports takes. This is Sean Drotar, one of the senior editors of Mile High Sports, also longtime Denver sports radio personality. You've done a lot in this business, and here we sit, and as people know you and as people meet you, do you get asked for your sports takes just like from everyone you come across?
Most, not everyone.
Okay.
The advantage is, if you've never seen a picture of me, I don't look like I sound. So there's that. But yeah.
People mistake you for late period Travolta?
Occasionally.
Sure.
Yeah, I have gotten that before. I've also gotten Brian the dog from Family Guy on The Voice. So I get that too. So I understand.
Quite the pair, dude. Because
yeah,
when
it
people
is.
See me, depending, and if I'm carrying more poundage, people think I'm the lead singer from Rascal Flatts.
Okay.
Which
I can kind of see it.
I don't care for that. Like, and because I don't care for that band. But yeah, I'm like, you're giving to use Gen Z slang, it's giving late period Travolta a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, late, fortunately, I mean, I guess he's a lot older than I am. So I don't know if that's a good sign or a bad sign. But
no, I think he is youthifying.
Yeah. Okay.
Youngening himself. I don't know.
Okay. Well, that works.
Well,
I'd probably take that.
He's leaning into what works for him.
Right.
You know what I mean? So anyway, I was just curious about that.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's come up. That one has come up. And literally the Family Guy one. And that doesn't have to do with just the sound, but also the propensity for using overly long words on air, which...
I suffer from the same affliction.
Yeah, at times has gotten me a talking to here and there.
You know what? Expand your vocabulary, people.
That was my argument.
Yeah,
same thing.
Do better. Like, I did improv for a while, and one of the things that they said is play to the top of your audience's intelligence.
I think it's the right idea. I think it's the right idea, especially in my business, even though that's not necessarily where a lot of companies that own radio stations want you to aim.
Sure.
And I think we could understand that for obvious reasons. And especially when you're talking sports, there is a presumption that there's still the sort of mouth-breathing bro audience is the
right.
only audience you're talking to, and that's not true. The NFL, for years, has had, for example, a near 50-50 split from men and women watching on television, and it has been that way for a while. So I think the idea of leaning into sort of the really lowest possible hanging fruit and targeting it for men, I've always thought there are enough people doing that.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't interest me. And I think you talk about an improv background. I mean, you have to do what makes you laugh, right?
Right. Yeah.
So I have to do what entertains me, what I would like to listen to. And I'm not going to be at my best if I'm trying to figure out what someone else wants to listen to.
Right.
Prince talked about that once when he talked about writing songs. And obviously a guy that varied wildly in his career.
Yeah.
And specifically said, well, you have to write what you love. You can't spend your time thinking what someone else will like. It won't
That's a fool's errand.
It won't work. And so I do the same thing. I like talking about concepts. I like talking about strategies. I like talking about how it all fits within the business, the overarching capitalistic structure of these leagues. I'm not afraid of diving into that. And I understand that I will lose some audience members. But I also think over the years that I've been doing this and lucky to do it in my hometown, I've also gained them and retained them
yep.
because they know what they're going to get and it's different than what they get in other places.
No, I agree with you 100%. And there's an axiom that I live by, which is don't step over a dollar to pick up a dime. And so if you start pandering or you start playing to what you think an audience wants, you're going to lose, right? If you stay true to yourself and you establish a brand, you establish a track record, it takes a very long time to establish a reputation. It takes a very short time to kind of erode that and or destroy it. And so for you to even come with that philosophy for something like sports radio, which has, I would say, a reputation that goes across the spectrum of opinions about it as a form, right? Some people think it's filled with nothing, right? There's nothing there intellectually stimulating. And then there are others who go, no, this can be quite good. This art form can be elevated. And what you're describing is you want it to be the best version of itself and something that you would want to listen to as a fan.
Ideally, yes. And I mean, I think when we look at sports, there are two things that really bring it into our culture, which is why it remains such a major part of our culture. And one of that is that naturally humans are sort of tribal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is a much healthier way, at least, of having, as we record this, a Nuggets-Lakers series right. way of rivalry, as opposed to, let's say, people from California invading Colorado directly. So right. I think hopefully we have a safer version of things when we talk about the competitive nature and sort of the tribalistic identity of sports when it comes to fans. But
if I say I hate Austin Reeves, I don't hate Austin Reeves the person.
No.
Right? He's just got a very punchable face and a terrible haircut. And he plays for the team that happens to be on the opposite side of the team that I adore most. And so
and he presents a threat to that team's success.
Right. And so but like that's a harmless sort of release valve for
right.
expressing that.
Because Austin Reeves gets traded to the Nuggets in a couple years and you're all on board again.
Right. Well, not necessarily. When Dale Carter got traded to the Broncos,
there are exceptions.
I'm like, no, I'm not cheering for this guy. I don't care for him. But anyway, so but to your point, I really like the way you approach this. And one of my big questions for you was, you've been doing this a long time.
Yeah.
And there are any number of legacy guys here in town. I'm sure you've crossed paths with many of them, perhaps co-hosted with a bunch of them. But and you've sort of answered this already, but how do you establish an identity and how do you carve out your space in such a crowded marketplace?
Well, some of it is interesting because one of the things in my career that is, I think, relatively unique for guys who have been on air for 10 or more years. This is year 13 for me in Denver, is the fact that I have never once been paired with an ex-athlete.
Oh, interesting.
And that in Denver is highly unusual because the sort of a standard is you grab the ex-jock and the radio guy. Now,
yeah.
The funny thing is everything in talk radio tends to migrate like it was the Oregon Trail. It goes from the East Coast slowly to the West Coast.
Okay.
And if you go back east and you hear the best talk shows, a lot of it is just two radio guys. Because
sure.
oftentimes what that means is, if to bring it to Denver, the Avalanche is good, the Nuggets are good, the Buffs and Rams have become interesting mm-hmm. in football, the Rockies are so bad they're almost entertaining to talk about, and the Broncos are right at the same time as the Rockies. In fact, they've been to the playoffs less recently than the Rockies. But if you just have, wow. for example, a football player, maybe you're not as equipped to handle all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not because the ex-player isn't doing their homework. Many of them do. Most of them do.
Yeah.
But they're sort of put in a bad position, too, because you're not going to tell the ex-football player to spend all their time talking about hockey. Because to a certain extent, the fan is going to go, well, why am I listening to that guy? Now, it doesn't mean he hasn't put in his work and isn't as good as someone who played even hockey that's new to the business. But it does present an obstacle for those hosts. And I've never worked with an ex-athlete, so I've been able to remain really flexible. The drawback, of course, is I'm also tend to be less visible because
yeah.
the marketing comes behind, follows the dollars goes to the ex-jocks. So finding a way to carve that out really becomes a challenging thing. And part of what I try to do is make myself easy to work with, be flexible, be ready.
Yeah.
If I'm on someone else's show, I can adjust. I can adapt a little bit like improvisational comedy. You
sure.
have to have a scene partner. And that means you have to figure out what they're good at, what they're bad at. And I think good hosts do that. And there are a lot of them in this market who have had that kind of career where they kind of pop up and they're very successful. I'll name drop one of them that I did work with for years at The Fan, Mike Evans, who's mm-hmm. been on air for a really long mm-hmm. time. And that's not ignoring my current co-host and been co-host for the last few years, Sandy Clough, professor yeah. emeritus of sports talk in Denver.
Right.
But Mike, for example, is one of the guys that I really learned from because Mike is a chameleon. If he needs to be funny with this coast, he's funny. If he needs to be the guy that's seriously setting the scene, he's serious. If he needs to be everything in between, and that's one of the reasons he's been so successful for so long, is because he can work with anybody. And early on, when I moved to radio from newspapers, I realized that's kind of where my skills lie. That flexibility will help me in that case. So that's kind of been the simplest explanation for my ability to sustain.
Well, a man after my own heart, you're on the John of All Trades podcast, for the love of God, where I'm talking to all sorts of different people about any number of different things. And what's interesting about that is
that copyrighted? Because John of All Trades might also work.
we'll have to get out the gladiator pugil sticks, you know, to do that. Yeah, we'll duke it out for the rhyme name, like that.
Old school, like on the balance beam, whatever one's...
Yeah, like American Gladiator.
Perfect.
Stuff. Yeah, that'll be... That seems like the correct way to handle something that silly.
It seems fair.
Right? That's got to be hard for ex-athletes, too, though, because they're put in a box, and maybe... I remember when I was talking to Vic Lombardi, someone we both know well, and Vic has been here forever, too. But he said a lot of times, like, you'll get an ex-NFL player, and they like talking baseball even more, or they like talking basketball even more. But you're sort of subverting and defying the audience's expectations of that athlete.
Right.
Right? Where, like, and honestly, I haven't listened to enough of him to know, but, like, it has to be jarring when you hear, like, Alfred Williams, you know, talking about the Avalanche or something.
Scott Hastings was the color guy for the Broncos.
Right.
For years. Yeah. Did a great job. Totally. Basketball player, you know, was an NBA player, Final Four participant in college, but they could certainly do it just like anybody else. Just have to put in the work.
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. But the audience wants to put you in a box too.
Right.
Right. So you have to figure out a way to work around that and be able to pivot. I was asking you when we started about, you know, I was asking you your take on the Zach Wilson trade,
yeah,
for instance. How do you fight and avoid burnout? Because I'm going to set this up real quick. DU just won the Frozen Four again.
Right.
10th time, I think.
10th time, unprecedented.
And I noticed on Twitter you earned some praise from people for giving that the proper respect it's due, mm-hmm, and covering that with depth and nuance and giving it its flowers that it deserved. How do you avoid burnout in terms of having sports takes where I'm sure things happen and you go, I am going to have to go talk about this now, and I really, really don't care, right? There's got to be things that come up where you go, man, I am just not interested in this, but it warrants conversation because it is top of mind for so many people.
Yeah, and I think the key to that is the part that I'm interested in. I'm a curious person, and I am more than happy to expend the energy and make sure that I have the bandwidth to cover everything. I made sure we covered DU hockey. We had Coach Carl on multiple times during the year. We spent time making sure that we had this team covered top to bottom, and including Coach Carl's run with the World Juniors. Make sure that it's great to be in Denver. You know, there's only 9 cities, I believe, that have what we call the Big Four sports.
Right.
Denver's one of them. They have some terrific college programs. Obviously, you have CU and CSU, DU, Air Force, all locally, with all specialties and terrific things that happen up there. So to my mind, I think you have to try to get bored in my business, at least in Colorado, because there's so much to cover. And, you know, soon enough, we're going to have the Olympics coming in a couple months, too. And,
true.
And the Colorado residents will be part of that. We know that there's move towards potentially a WNBA team, a professional women's soccer team. All these things could be coming into Denver. So it is plenty to stay busy as long as you're interested in all of it. And I think I'm just interested in sports from a human nature, a competitive standpoint. And I'm one of those guys that, you know, you're out in your backyard and someone wants to play badminton. I'm in. Someone's playing ultimate frisbee. Okay, I'm in on that. Cornhole? Sure. All of it. I like to compete. I like to play. I like to figure out those strategies. So for me, it's not hard to get bored, although the Rockies are testing my patience. And as a guy that loves baseball more than any of them, it is... I think the Rockies are chipping away at my ability to actually love baseball, which I didn't think was possible.
God, I'm so there, too. Like I
didn't think it was possible.
Me either.
But they're trying.
They're working really hard.
They're only on pace to win 37 games this year. Maybe that would do something.
That is frightening. Also, what's your take on that commissioner, Manfred?
That's interesting, and I'm going to say some things that are probably unpopular. Sometimes you can have... You know, the only Nixon can go to China type of thing. Manfred looked at baseball from a non-baseball fan perspective, mm-hmm. and I actually believe that's what they needed, because baseball has been highly resistant to change. Oddly, it's been more resistant to change in the last 50 years than in the many years before, where the rules changed all the time. Yeah. You know, you would raise and lower the mound with regularity, Gibson, sure, all these sort of things, and now it's just you can't change baseball. Manfred looked at it and I think correctly realized, why do we have to have everyone throw the pitch four times to walk somebody? Can we think about the fans first and see if that's valuable? And then you had some of the old heads going, but once every 3 years, somebody throws a wild pitch on it. It doesn't matter. The idea on the tiebreakers, my co-host Sandy Clough hates it. And I totally respect that. But I guess I look at it and realize that, like, American audience, they want outcomes. Why the shootout in hockey is popular.
Right.
You get an outcome, you get it faster. It's on a weeknight. Teams in baseball are always traveling. You don't want to get stuck in a 19-inning thing. And in the playoffs, you're going to play it out.
Right.
So these are regular season changes. The pitch clock makes perfect sense. There weren't any changes in baseball when the pitch clock happened, except the game sped up. There's nothing wrong with the sport of baseball.
Okay.
It's not even the pace of play. It's the pace of action. There's got to be something happening for the fans to watch. And Manfred understands that. And is he doing it in a bull in a china shop fashion? I suppose so, but baseball as a whole, Colorado notwithstanding, actually not only went up again in attendance, but of the four major sports, it is the only one in which its average ticket buyer got younger.
Weird.
In 2023, and you would have been stunned if anyone would have said that 10 years prior, that baseball would be the one with its average ticket buyer getting younger. But there it is, because the sport itself is entertaining. Just put more of the fun stuff forward.
You know, you bring, that's probably the clearest headed take I've heard about Rob Manfred in his favor, right? You have a pretty sober analysis of why a lot of the things he's done has worked. And I think you bring up a good point where baseball, and particularly its fans, are drunk on their own bathwater, like, a lot.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Just overly romantic about, there are times, I had Fubo this year, mm-hmm. a platform I didn't much care for, but I wanted to watch the Nuggets.
Somebody say, I know why you have it.
Yeah, of course you do. I mean, you're sitting here in my kitchen, I'm wearing a Nuggets shirt, for God's sake.
Yeah, I'm wearing a Nuggets hat and was hosting a program on that television network you couldn't watch last year. Yeah.
Oh, perfect. Which one?
You Bet Tonight.
Oh, you were on You Bet with Nate?
Yeah,
okay, that's right. I forgot that, because I'm not a sports gambling guy. And so that show just kind of misses me, right?
Yeah, well, it missed a lot of people because you couldn't see it.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, I did catch some of it.
Yeah.
Like, just because it was usually on, like, right around the time the Nuggets and the Avs were on. And I thought, as far as that format, I thought you all did a really nice job, because it had high energy, had really good production values. It was easy to follow. And, like, I could tell it was really fun and engaging. I'm not a sports gambling guy, again, so it's the content is not for me. But I recognize form, and I recognize what's happening in terms of how a show is constructed.
Yeah. And that was a fun experience, because that's the first writing I've ever done for television.
Oh, really?
And that's a different animal.
Okay.
Yeah, I've written for the internet, I've written for newspapers, I've written for magazines. Mm-hmm. Television is a different animal entirely.
On Fubo, I think the point, I was trying to remember where I was going. Fubo, I had the Marquee Network, and so my entire family's from Chicago, so grew up Cub fans. So the Marquee Network is nice, and they'll air these old games, right? So I'll check out a game from, like, 1989 or 1984 or any time period in the last 40-plus years. And there are times where I'm like, oh, this is going to be fun, you know? I'm going to get that old-time feeling. And I'm watching it, and I'm like, I'm bored out of my skull. Like, just because the pace of play, even in the 1980s, was just so different. And the rhythms of it, sometimes it's nice if you're watching this, like, on an afternoon, you got nothing else to do. It's nice to have on as background noise. But for it to survive, you're not going to get people to do that, because there are simply too many other options available.
Now, yeah, exactly.
So.
And I think baseball has an advantage in that it is still sort of background noise.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly people going to Rockies games can do that standing up on the rooftop and realizing they only have to turn their head and look at the field when the crowd starts cheering. But, yeah, it's trying to keep a sport alive like that, where the sort of languid pace for generations was one of its pluses, not a minus,
is
very different. And so the evaluative process there that Manfred's gone through, as looking from a fan perspective, the argument that everyone had against him coming in, well, he's not a baseball guy. That's not necessarily the worst thing. And I think what Manfred is doing is he's the right guy at the right time.
Right.
But it's not going to be a popular run, but I think the sport's going to be left in a better place. And the other thing with baseball that they're getting over is the whole unwritten rules nonsense.
Oh, God.
And that's just silly. And, like, baseball's fun. Let it be fun. Yeah. The guy cranks one 450 feet, let him fist pump or flip the bat or whatever. And you know what? And if you're a pitcher and you strike that dude out looking, you can fist pump too. That's fine.
Yeah, watch him go back to the dugout. Wave at him for all I care.
Sure, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Bye-bye, you're going to go sit
you
down
got
now.
Got. Like, well, I get to celebrate
it's
a little
sport,
bit.
It's sport, man. Right. Like, that's, I don't get it either. We're not electing a pope here.
No.
Right? So, like, when baseball gets so serious about itself, I think that's off-putting for people, too. Because, again, you're right, this is supposed to be fun. The NFL is often called a no-fun league.
Right.
Right? And so, you know, the sanctity of the game, and it's like, no. Like, trash-talking is part of the game.
Mm-hmm. I mean, think of the NBA, right? I mean, you have dunks. You don't get to hang on the rim as long as you'd like, but you'll notice they let them do it on certain mm-hmm. moments. And you don't want to be in a poster. That's easy. Don't get dunked on if they made posters anymore.
Make a stop.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and it's the same thing in any sport. And I don't have a problem with it. And baseball's relaxed that as well. And some of that was just happening because a younger generation plays that way. And it connects with audiences, and baseball, to their credit, has decided maybe we just need to get out of the way on this one.
Well, okay, so as long as we're talking unwritten rules, I got to bring one up that really bugs me in hockey,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, please don't shoot the puck so hard into my empty net. It's like, what kind of baby are you? I thought hockey players were the toughest ones among us, right? But they get butthurt when someone, you know, puts a slapper into the empty net at the end of a game. What are you taught? You already are losing this game.
Yeah.
What is the difference?
I would somehow, quite frankly, I really don't get it, because I think the person who just kind of babies it across the line and as it goes across the line, that's even worse. I'd rather you're like, okay, whatever, you got ahead, you scored, fine, I can live with it. We knew that was a gamble. I don't get it. That is, that one especially, hockey has some unwritten rules and some of them actually make sense, but that one makes no sense. You pulled your goalie. You know what the risk is. Now they have to gently score on you.
What is the correct speed here?
Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, like, what do we know? Do we know now?
Yeah. never will.
Is a Nathan MacKinnon wrist shot also too much, or is it just a slapper?
Yeah.
What if you're from X amount of distance? Nobody knows. It's basically the unwritten rule, I think, in the end, is just the team that's losing already is upset, and they're just looking for an excuse to maybe shove somebody around.
Yeah, which, get over yourselves here, fellas. Yeah.
Pulled the goalie.
Yeah.
Same thing, right? If you don't want to get scored on, leave your guy in the net.
And I agree with some of the unwritten rules. Like, don't, after the whistle's blown, don't shoot on the goalie. That's fine.
Because he's not looking. He's not protecting himself. Correct.
Yeah. That's,
that makes sense.
That one's fine. The empty net thing, man, grow up.
Yeah.
Like, get over yourself.
That's dumb.
You brought up that you were on YouBet. I want to talk about that a little bit, because I am very, like, I'm on the record as not being in favor of sports gambling.
Okay.
I find it exhausting. I find it distasteful. I'm just exhausted by the overwhelming volume of messages about it, too.
Yeah.
As someone who works in this industry and who has worked directly in the gambling side of it,
mm-hmm.
what is your take on it? What are the pros? What are the cons? Where do you see it going from here?
Well, one of the cons I think you mentioned right now, it inundates sports broadcasts. That, I think, will change, because as we've seen with anything, it has to do with market penetration, right? If it eventually is legal in all 50 states, you will start seeing less targeted things and more wide, and then eventually it'll just kind of stop being a thing, right?
I mean,
it's a matter of
it becomes like the wallpaper,
right?
Like anything.
Exactly. Yeah, I get it. Okay. So I think right now, as it continues to try to expand, it really is in your face to the point where I get it. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
I look at, it's fine, I'll pick one out, but Aaron Paul recording for one of the, you know, I don't give him a name, but Aaron Paul does some commercials.
Mm-hmm.
He just seems mad at me the whole time. You can bet on this and this.
At Bet365.
I'm like, dude, why? What's so, it's supposed to be fun?
Dial back the intensity.
Yeah, a little bit. Like, this is, like, it's not Breaking Bad. It's okay. It's a different part. But it's, I get that part of it. I think that it's human nature to gamble, whether we do it with money, whether you do it with just about anything we make friendly, but it's human nature. I think it's going to be this. You think it's going to be this.
Mm-hmm.
So I think to a certain extent it's unavoidable. I think what's interesting about it is the idea of the current scandals, right? The NFL has had to suspend a lot of players. Michael Porter Jr.'s brother, Jontay Porter, from the league.
For life.
For life. And one of the things I think is fascinating is I get a lot of responses to me, isn't that proof that there shouldn't be gambling?
Hmm.
And I look at it and think, do you think it wasn't happening before? The truth is that by having this legalized and tracked and all the big
regulated
data and sample sizes and regulated, is that the ne'er-do-wells are more likely to get caught.
Mm.
And I think that's a big part of this. So it appears it's the same thing, right? When you talk about other kinds of crime, if you didn't report other types of crime before, or you didn't have the opportunity or the data set to report it, then it seems like, and we've seen this in Denver, crime is exploding, right?
Right, right.
Now, is the crime actually exploding, or is it the data being presented that was not presented before, giving you the impression? And I think the gambling part of sports is very much the same. So are there legitimate arguments to be made with like player props? Yes, because that's the easiest to exploit,
sure.
Certainly. And I would expect in the next few years what you'll see, and let's just take basketball example, is only the starters will be available. You won't get props on bench guys. And I don't think Colorado's one of the places where you can't have college player prop bets by law. And okay. I think it will stay that way. And I actually think laws that states that have it, you'll maybe see that get rolled back. And that will probably be where it settles in. I think for the most part, you're seeing actually it more likely that people get caught. And that's where something the leagues don't like it being out there because it looks bad every time. But I actually think it's a net plus because much like NIL in college, and that's another thing that we can talk about, the things that are under the table now are above the table. And when there's above the table, it's transparent, it's obvious, and it's harder to get away with things when it's in the light.
That's a fair point. One thing I want to tease out a little bit here, let's talk about this from a slightly different angle. You'll hear players and coaches getting screamed at by fans for ruining perhaps their player prop bet. You know, like I had you scoring 27 points, you only scored 25. That to me seems like a net negative. What's your take?
It is a net negative. And it happens. It's not new. It happened with fantasy sports. It's been happening with fantasy sports for decades as well. So it's not new. But again, the just the amount of people that are the joint bets, you know, jerks are jerks. And if
jerks
you're
a jerk,
right, if you're a pro coach or a pro athlete, you have to understand that that probably comes with it. And it can be really frustrating to be sure. And I would say, yeah, it is definitely a negative. At the same time, the leagues probably don't look at it that way because what you're getting is some very focused interest. Games in which maybe fans were turning off. Now, all of a sudden, they're a little concerned because maybe that guy has one more bucket in him and that's going to make them some money. So it is a net negative, I think, from the fan perspective and from the player perspective. The problem is it's not a net negative from the league perspective. It's a positive. That's a feature, not a bug for them, because the more eyeballs stay on their sport, the more money they make, the more money they make from their gambling partners.
Yeah.
Capitalism 101, for better or for worse.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, We can differ in our opinion here. Doesn't change the fact that it exists. And finding sort of that cultural through line, I think, is going to be interesting going forward.
It is.
Right?
It is.
I'll be interested to see where it goes from here. I want to pivot quite a bit here because as I was looking into you, at one point, did you have like 80 freelancers under you? Or 60 like beat writers?
Oh, yes, at USA Today.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you have basically, when I was senior editor over at USA Today, coordinating, depending on the season, NBA, NHL, and Major League Baseball. I'm getting the stories from all across the country that gets turned into the little, you know, the little stories you get in USA Today. So if you're, whatever, at that Marriott out at, you know, outside of Des Moines, Iowa, and you wanted to know how the Lakers did, that we made sure we got you. But yeah, that was a lot of herding cats, to be sure, and a lot of...
How long did you do that?
12 years.
Good God, man. That's
not a lot of sleep in those 12 years.
No, and being an editor is a nightmare. Right?
And of course, occasionally, you know, you have situations where someone misses or whatever, and it's deadline, and I'm admittedly having to write something up.
About a game you didn't watch?
About a game I didn't see, and I'm trying to get contemporary reports. It feels like the old, you remember in Bull Durham, you have the one guy in the back, and he's got the little block and a stick, and it's going, knock, base hit by Crash Davis, he's just going off of whatever he heard somewhere else. So there was a bit of that at times. But for the most part, it's really impressive to see how those big national media units can work together. It's remarkable how it comes together, but it comes together quick. And it's a lot. I think I looked and it was something like, you know, we didn't use all of it in the newspaper because some of it then went to, say, Baseball Weekly when USA Today published that. And some of it went to its partners. But it was something like editing, I think it was 100, roughly an average, about 165 written pages a night.
Dude, that's a lot of reading.
Yeah, and a lot of rewriting.
Yeah,
a lot of spell checking and punctuation, all that other stuff.
Were you the tip of the spear there? Did it all sort of filter through you?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you have writers. And when you're talking at the USA Today level, it's good writers.
Yeah, yeah.
It's good, professional, yeah. Best of the best writers that they're picking. But yeah, it just all filtered through me. And I'm the one that, when it was done, I'm the one that hit publish.
Wow.
It's good to go. Send it back to New York and start running them.
How did you get into that? Like, how did that gig come about?
I actually got recruited for it. After I finished up at the University of Colorado, I got hired by ESPN to cover the Denver Nuggets. Back then, ESPN.com was comparatively new. They were trying to figure out what to do with this. This would have been 94.
Okay.
So still comparatively new. They were looking for people who could be, you know, basically on that beat. I got hired there, and then I got picked up after some of my stories hit the right people to write for Page Two, if you remember that.
Yeah.
When ESPN kind of tried to
launch Bill Simmons.
Right. Yeah. A humorous thing. So I wrote for Page Two. I did some pieces with Patrick Ruby, who then went on to bigger and better things as a writer back east. And that was a tremendous amount of fun. And then that captured.
Dude, I loved Page Two.
I loved Page Two as well. I loved it.
I used to go there like every day.
I did too. So, I mean, when I got the opportunity to write for it, I jumped all over it.
Right.
And again, you know, you get to have a little humor and a little personality in your stories. And that obviously, I think, did a good job preparing me for what I do now. But I got recruited away from ESPN and got a raise, got an opportunity. And I could do it basically from my home because there was no purpose. I briefly had an office downtown, but they realized, why are we doing this? It's the middle of the night, and there is literally no one else in the city where he's at that we're working with. So we just ran a line to my home and did it from there. And so at that point, it made for a pretty good move.
Wow. You've had a remarkable career. As we talk about it, I mean, ESPN, USA Today, a couple of tours of duty at The Fan.
Mm-hmm.
You find yourself at Mile High Sports.
Second tour there, as a matter of fact.
Actually, second tour there. You're right. Paired up with Sandy Clough once again, who,
yeah.
I mean, I like the way you called him Professor Emeritus. That's perfect, right? Because anyone who's ever crisscrossed on Denver sports radio at some point has come across Sandy Clough at a bare minimum.
And you've either been able to hang with him or you haven't. So I'm pretty happy I've been able to hang with him.
How are you feeling about this phase of your career versus some of the other stops you've had along the way?
It's really rewarding because where I'm at right now, there really is there's no directive to do anything in particular.
Okay.
The idea is, you know, I'm working with Sandy. I'm writing the show every day. Sandy is fine with that because he's the most prepared person on earth. And he'll come in with an entire armload of, you know, reference materials and be ready to go. The stuff that he hasn't memorized. And there hasn't been a directive about it. So Nate Lundy, the program director and president over there at Mile High Sports, has done a terrific job when he brought me back and Sandy back of basically saying, you guys know what you're doing. Just do what you're doing, you know,
yeah.
To the point where if he's flipping on the radio and we're talking about women's high school lacrosse, he's going to think about, but then he's like, there's probably a reason and just let it go. So I think that part is really, really rewarding and being able to lean more into the nature of, the digital aspect of radio, where I think it's all going, you know, live radio. I think live talk radio still has a longer runway in front of it than a lot of other types of radio because it is hard to duplicate. Eventually, look, we're all going podcasts. You know, we have a lot of listeners. I've had a lot of listeners for years that are service people that are overseas, people that are expats living abroad. They want to keep up with what's going on in Denver and they're listening to it on their time schedule. So, you know, radio shows are turned into podcasts and off they go. And I like that we're leaning into more of that because that's just the world we live in. Things are on demand. And when they're not on demand, they'd better be something that are so culturally important that if you're not going to talk about the thing you did last night at work, then you're going to listen to it on your time or watch it on your own time. That's how we do it. I don't watch any television that's on demand except sports, or say the vice versa. That's the only thing I watch live is sports. Why would I? I have my schedule's weird. I have to chop it up, put it where I want to put it.
Now, fair enough. I mean, I like having TV as as a background, which is one of the reasons, you know, I love baseball so much. So I actually miss linear cable. I'm one of the weird people who misses.
Well, we're all just going back to it, right? As
eventually it sure feels
all split apart, and then it's just gonna
We're gonna reinvent cable bundles.
Yeah, the black hole of gravitational pull is gonna turn it all into reinventing it. Right?
How unusual is that quality in a boss like Nate to just be like, "You guys know what you're doing. I'm gonna get out of your way."
In radio?
Yeah.
It's pretty unusual. I mean, obviously the bigger you go when you're syndicated, you have a lot more responsibility, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I've done that before as well. When you're syndicated, Nate and I did a show on Bleacher Report nationally for a couple of years. We were Sean Salisbury's lead in, so that was a different set of standards. But
sure.
But by and large it's somewhat unique, and I think it's definitely has to be earned. I mean, it has to be something where you've done it for long enough and prove that you can get the ratings that you need to get and prove that you know when to switch topics and what to cover and what not to cover. And it's in that case, it's rewarding, because I don't like, in general, you talked about maybe getting bored earlier. The standard way of doing sports talk radio, I'm not telling secrets out of class, they'll tell you that in, let's say, a 3-hour show, mm-hmm. you'll do maybe the first 2 hours are unique, and then the third hour you're just redoing the first hour because you've loaded your first hour with all the hits, right?
Yeah.
And the odds are that people aren't listening for the entire 3 hours, that your audience does not listen for the full thing. They pop in and pop out probably when they're driving to and from work. But that to me is always, is an intellectual exercise. That's what bores me. Yeah. I'd rather create a full show of content and have all of it be unique. Now, of course, we're going to call back to the big stories of the day every day. But if I'm going to do that, I want to find a different angle on it than I did before. Mm-hmm. And that's in part for radio. For most of my career, that was kind of considered a negative and something that I had in previous spots, some discussions with supervisors and program directors about.
Sure.
But now it feels like it was preparing me for this time frame in which everything is sliced and diced, and I'm not giving you repeat stuff in a show. I'm giving you something fresh every single segment, and it's sort of come around the long way. And that part, I guess, is validating to the strategy that I've had all along.
That makes really good sense to me. And you and I kind of bonded over this when we met the first time, which was just recently.
Yeah.
But we were in the Mile High Sports office, and I was talking about when I go and do KOA. And they give me 3 hours. And it's like, obviously, people aren't going to be listening that whole time. But
right.
I'm not repeating any segments. I'm coming up with a fresh 3 hours. Mm-hmm. So that if people find me and they listen to that in a podcast later. So your philosophy is dead on to me. Like, it makes perfect sense. And it's really well suited to this particular moment where you don't need the same thing, like, filtered to you again and again and again. The fact that you've built your career on that, I mean, in a lot of ways, kind of ahead of its time.
Well, that's extremely nice to say. I mean, you know, if so, I've been lucky to do that. But that was the idea. It just always felt like the right thing. And again, it just calls back to the idea, like, what would I want to listen to? And I generally, I admit it, that I rarely listen to sports talk radio. It was a reference that I had sort of realized years and years and years ago. Bill Maher once joked about listening or watching Jon Stewart on The Daily Show.
Mm-hmm.
And said something to the effect, and I'm paraphrasing, that, like, I had to stop watching Jon Stewart on The Daily Show because I realized that subconsciously I was co-opting some of these jokes or some of these takes because we had some similar mindsets. And as a result, I realized, you know what? I'm not going to do that. And so I really try not to listen to sports talk radio when I'm not on for that exact purpose, because there are a lot of people in this market that I like, respect, have worked with, that I know have interesting and very good takes that I would consider very seriously. And as a result, I really don't listen to them. So I try to provide something that's just me. And I think that probably led into that. So my instinct is I'm just going to do what I would listen to and hope that finds its audience. And hopefully, for the most part, good work finds its audience. And I think now, probably more than ever before, because everyone can search for exactly what they want.
Sure.
At least that's the, you can't see me, it's a podcast, but my fingers are crossed.
Well, speaking of looking ahead, what haven't you done that you still want to?
I think it would be fun to do a show with an athlete once,
to
have that dynamic, something that I haven't done before, you know, being able to both help set them up to succeed in the sport of that they played, and also to have an opportunity to expand that horizon. You know, wouldn't it be fun to one of these days have a Vaughn Miller, but have him talk about hockey? which you know that he loves. You know these sort of things. That to me sounds like a really really fun exercise. Otherwise, you know, it's really a treat. You're never satisfied, but I understand I'm in a great spot. You know, I'm born and raised in Colorado, and this is a special state. I knew when there was an opportunity to move, when ESPN came calling, to go somewhere else, that maybe it was a thought process. At the same time, I started to realize all the country is moving here.
Yeah.
So maybe the grass isn't greener on the other side, and I haven't regretted that. Now being able to be one of the few guys that's, you know, born here, raised here, has worked here, and has been able to see the city grow, see the state grow, see the sporting landscape grow, and watch all of the Denver media grow around it has been really rewarding. And being part of that's it's special. And so even if things don't get much bigger than they are now, I come to work every day with a smile on my face because I enjoy what I do, and I enjoy what I get to bring to people who fewer and fewer are similar to me. There's not that many natives around anymore. You run into them, people are surprised now. Growing up,
me too,
didn't be that weird, right? I mean, yeah. Back that weird, it was kind of like you run into people who were generations, and it's just a change, and there's nothing wrong with it, but it's unique. And so I enjoy that a lot. And I really enjoy, I will not get bored of the idea for culturally. And Denver's kind of an interesting, it continues to be an interesting melting pot as it grows. The thing I think that people relate to about sports, even if they're not sports fans because they don't like the game, is that sports to me represents the closest thing we have in American society to a true meritocracy. Mm. You can be born with money, you can be born poor, you can come out of anywhere at all, and you can be drafted high or you can be undrafted. But by the time the practices start, the best players get the jobs,
yeah.
And they don't care. And you can be Zach Wilson, and you can be the number two pick in the draft. And if you're not the best guy, you don't get the job. And that's, I think, the closest thing to a true meritocracy we have. It is imperfect, but it does exist. And I think people can find that relatable. And it also brings so many people from so many different walks of life together. And I think we can all relate on some certain level of watching everybody who's coming from anywhere and watching the person who does the best gets rewarded for it, because that at least is in theory the American ethos, right?
Yeah.
The up from the bootstraps, become the best at what you do, and you'll get rewarded for it. In a lot of our life, it doesn't work that way, because there are, for myriad reasons, influences and powers that are larger than most of us, that steer things in different directions that aren't necessarily a meritocracy. But in sports, it really boils down to winning games, and at that point, you can't afford to have as much pickiness about, well, I only want this particular thing in my quote unquote corporate culture.
Right.
You got to win. And to do that, you have to get the best of the best. And you can't be particular about where they came from, or if they were your high draft pick, or if they're the guy that you were lucky to find when Taco Bell was busy advertising a Quesarito commercial. And that's the beauty.
Doughy Serbian guy.
Exactly. That's the beauty of sports. And I think even when people don't think about what they're seeing, they sense it. And it's one of the reasons so many people kind of put themselves into those moments, because if they were good enough, they'd have that opportunity. Mm. And probably nothing would actually stop you. The only limit is your skill and your talent. That is appealing. And that always changes that generation to generation. It ages out. Certain skill sets matter more. Certain skill sets matter less. It's always changing. So it's always fascinating to me in the micro level, in one single game, in one single possession, and then on the macro level when we look at American society and society at large. Who are the Nuggets' best two players? A man from Serbia and a man from Canada.
I could talk to you all day about this, because you have a worldview that I just very much subscribe to, and I really enjoy hearing it. But we do need to wrap up. I can't let you get out of here without giving me a couple predictions. So we're recording this on a Monday. This goes live 2 days from now on Wednesday. The Nuggets are currently up 1-0 on the Lakers, won the first game by 11. How do you see that series playing out?
I don't think the Nuggets will sweep, but I think they'll win, and they'll win in 5 or 6. The Lakers played very well in game one. They can't get much better out of LeBron James and Anthony Davis, and it still wasn't all that close. The Nuggets are just better. They're deeper, and there isn't anybody who can combat Jokic. Anthony Davis's particular defensive skill set doesn't work against Jokic, so he has to roam and play passing lanes. It's not a good fit. The Nuggets will go there. They have a very good chance at repeating, but a very good chance at repeating is probably still I think a little lower than 50-50 because the road they have to go to get there is very hard. There are no softies on the way. It's not like Boston that has cream puffs the rest of the way, and they can pretty much punch their ticket to the final. But they are good enough to do it. And here we are talking about the Denver Nuggets, who their championship was what I considered the least likely championship in Denver sports history, and one that I can honestly say all my years into sports, I did not think I would see, because the structure of the NBA until recently, what Adam Silver has done, has always heavily favored the megalopolises. There's six teams that are the Globetrotters. The rest are the Generals. That's no longer the case. And so this has been a tremendous run for the Nuggets. And however it ends this year, I hope fans enjoy seeing what they're seeing, because they won't see it again when this team eventually breaks up or retires for another 50 years at best.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. I am living. It's hog heaven right now.
Yeah, enjoy it. Just enjoy watching it.
Yeah, it's incredible. Is there one team in particular that scares you in the West?
Minnesota scares me. I think they're talented. I think they are defensively gifted. I think that they have enough size, and they have a lot of the time. The Nuggets have the advantage, and Nikola Jokic is the one player there's no mark for. I think Anthony Edwards is very quietly one of the top half dozen players in the NBA, and the Nuggets do not have an answer for him. They do not. If he's on, they can't stop him.
Interesting.
And that means the Minnesota can stay close. Close games, you never know what
happens. It's a coin flip.
Yeah, so that's the most dangerous team to me.
Georgiev just gave up 7 goals to a not high-powered offensive team in Winnipeg. They are down 1-0. How do you see that series going?
23 times in modern playoff hockey, a goaltender's given up 7 or more goals. The 16 saves that Georgiev had in game one was the lowest number of saves.
Well, you said 23 times. I thought, 23 shots, too.
Yeah. So, obviously, it's tough. I don't think that Georgiev is a disaster. I don't think you run him out of town. But I think that right now, he's not right. And I don't think that Justus Annunen is a better goalie. But he's more steady. He's more consistent. And sometimes, to paraphrase Bill Belichick talked about when he was looking at free agents once, rating guys on a 1 through 10. He's like, I don't want a guy that's a 10 on one day and a 3 on the next day. Give me a whole team of 6s, and they're a 6 every time, and I'm good, because I can plan for that. And I think in Justus Annunen, that's probably where the Avs have to go, and probably the sooner the better. I think Jared Bednar knows it, but he's loath to make those changes in his career. He's never wanted goalie controversies for obvious reasons, because it can damage the locker room. The two jobs in sports, goaltender in hockey, quarterback in football, are the two that you kind of have to pick a guy and ride it, because the whole team's confidence goes out the window when you have to make a change.
Well, at a certain point, too, for fans of that team, the backup goalie and the backup quarterback, most popular guy on the roster.
Oh, most popular guys in town. That's the great, the greatest job in Colorado. It's not governor. It's not whatever. It is the backup quarterback of the Denver Broncos.
Do you think they escape Winnipeg?
I think it's possible. I think that first loss doesn't matter that much. If I were to say it today, I would say no, but I'm not confident, because you have three generational Hall of Fame players in MacKinnon, Makar, and Rantanen, all in their prime. And they did put up 6 goals on, I think, the guy who's likely to win the Vezina and Connor Hellebuck.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put it past them, but it's going to be hard. And the way they finished in a skid where they only won outright 3 of their last 10 games, that was a problem. And if they were to get knocked out of the first round again 2 years in a row, I think that it would be unfair. But I think there will be some heat on Jared Bednar, because you have three generational talents in their prime. It's hard to get bounced out of the first.
Yeah, I agree. And that last year, that series with the Kraken was just so weird. Deeply unpleasant on some levels as well. Sean Drotar, where can people find you? This is the time on the show when we do plugs. Your social media presence, your work at Mile High Sports, wherever people can find you, plug it now.
Pretty easy. Pretty much every social media is S Drotar, S for Sean, and D-R-O-T-A-R, the traditional spelling of Drotar. If you've ever run into any others, there you go. But S Drotar on
it's
social.
It's pretty phonetic, too, which is...
It actually is, but if you just tell people, it's like you handed them a hand grenade with the pin pulled out. They don't know how to spell it or say it.
Bro, my last name's Extra. Letters, okay,
right?
Like...
And there's supposed to be an accent mark over the A, but we're just not going to do that nonsense. So, S. Drotar on social, on Mile High Sports. You can obviously find it over there at MileHighSports.com, and you can catch Sandy Clough and I on our program 4 to 6 p.m. every single weeknight, or you can obviously catch us whenever the podcast strikes you. It's easy to find on MileHighSports.com or on the free Mile High Sports app. And soon enough, I'll be starting a new podcast, a postcast video breaking down the Denver Nuggets and the Colorado Rockies, and there will be others coming along with Locked On Sports. So the Locked On Postcast, a new product we're starting, I'll be doing that this spring and summer and fall as well. And if you happen to be covering the Colorado Buffaloes in the press box during football season, starting last year, I took over as the press box announcer from David Platty, which something that I'm glad they didn't inform me of that until a couple weeks into the season, because otherwise I might not have taken the gig, because that would have been intimidating.
Congratulations. That's terrific. All of that will be linked in the companion blog piece that's on johnofalltrades.us or in the show notes if you're listening on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, wherever you get your pods. You can find me there. Sean Drotar, man, this was a pleasure. I think you do exceptional work, and it was great to get to highlight you. I wish you nothing but continued success.
Thanks so much, John. Appreciate it. This is always a tremendous amount of fun to sit down and break it down. I think what you do is really, really fascinating, and I'm really happy to be able to be on the list of more significant people that you've had on, so it was a treat.
And that'll do it for episode 366 of the John of All Trades podcast with Sean Drotar from Mile High Sports. What a great dude. And you know what? As I'm recording this, the Avalanche managed to tie it up. The Nuggets are ahead 2-0. I'm feeling optimistic about both. That could change. Who knows? Sports are like that. It's an emotional roller coaster. The John of All Trades podcast is a production of Deft Communications. Check out Deft on the web, DEFTCOM.US. I am a public communications professional, so all manner of public outreach I've done for 15 years. If you have something you need to do, you want to communicate more or better, hit me up. I'm also a podcast producer. I have 7 shows going right now. I'd love to add yours to the roster of shows. So if you want to email me, it's John, J-O-N, at DEFTCOM.US. DEFTCOM.US. No matter where you're listening, podcatchers galore, I am certainly on that platform. If you have the opportunity to rate, review, and subscribe, the subscribe button is your friend. Brand new shows come directly to your inbox. What the hell am I talking about? You don't have to do anything. It just comes right to your listening device. Bob's your uncle. Listen away. Hit me up on social. It's J-O-A-T pod. That's Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, Pinterest, Instagram, Blue Sky, and Threads. Episode previews go up on Mondays. New episodes drop on Wednesdays. I'm out of here for this week, and I'm off next week. I'm going to the Kentucky Derby. That's going to be epic. So I will likely be back with a solo episode talking about that whole experience. Can't wait to bring it to you. So wish me safe travels, and until I hear you again, say goodnight, Gracie.
That's good, Johnny.